Thank you, Liz. Morning. It's really good to be with you again. I've been here, I'm coming to speak to you a few times now, and it's lovely to come back and to see you again, and thank you very much for your welcome. Just to tell you a little bit about myself, if I've not met you before, my name's Emma. I worship at St Matthew's in Kingsdown, where my husband is the vicar, and I am associate minister. But my day job is teaching students at Trinity College in Stoke Bishop, so we prepare men and women for different kinds of ordained and lay ministry there. So that's kind of what I'm about. I've got two children aged 11 and 16, AS levels looming, so you know our house is a bit stressy at the moment, so it's great to be here with you. This morning you begin your series on the Ten Commandments, and I get to kick it off, which is great. Thank you for asking me. I've been asked to set the scene for the whole series and also to think about the first commandment. So I don't know if you had any lunch planned, but no, I promise we won't be too long. People often think about the Ten Commandments as one of the worst things in the Christian faith. Maybe we might be a bit embarrassed by them. Perhaps we have rather scary memories of them written on stone tablets on drafty church walls. Maybe they're not one of the first things that we mention to our friends when we're trying to tell them about how great it is to be a Christian. You know, you should be a Christian because we have the Ten Commandments. You know, maybe you don't say that so often. A recent survey found out that it was a survey of 15 to 24-year-olds. And it found that 10% of them had never heard of the Ten Commandments. So 10%, one in 10 of 15 to 24-year-olds haven't even heard of them. And 50%, half of them, couldn't name a single one of them. So half of them couldn't even name one. And I wonder if we might be afraid that they reinforce people's negative views of the Christian faith as a bit legalistic and a bit judgmental and a bit scary. Thou shalt not. But what I'd like to show us this morning is that is to get the Ten Commandments completely wrong. They are not like that at all. But people have had a go at writing their own. In 2005, there was a big thing. I think Channel 4 did it. And they asked people to come up with 10 commandments for today. They reckon the ones in the Bible were a bit out of date and we should have some new ones. So these are the 10 commandments that people came up with in this survey. Number 1, be honest. 2, enjoy life. 3, treat others as you'd like to be treated. 4, be true to yourself. 5, protect your family. 6, look after your health. 7, try your best at all times. 8, appreciate what you have. 9, protect the environment. And 10, take responsibility for your own actions. Now, those are good things. They're all about living well with myself and with other people. But what is missing? You can answer. What is missing? God. I can see a lot of people say, yeah, God. There is no sense of anything other in that. It's all about me and you, which is great, but no sense of living in a framework of any kind of wider divine power, which is to totally miss the points of the Ten Commandments. We tend to think about them as a set of rules, but actually they're all about a relationship. They're not the Ten Commandments, they're God's Ten Commandments. I've got a quote here by someone called Gordon Graham, who is professor of moral philosophy at Aberdeen University, so it sounds like a very important person. But Gordon Graham says this: strictly speaking, you can't have a commandment without someone who's issued it. People want a clear framework for behavior. They want strong and clear guidelines, but they don't actually know how to get them. The truth is, they can't get them if they ditch the religious context in which they were originally written. So you can't have the Ten Commandments, he's saying, if you ditch God. That's why I wonder, you know, there's lots of debate, isn't there, about whether the Ten Commandments can form the basis of society today. and I think they probably can't form the basis of a secular society. There's some good things in them, but there's too much about God for a secular society. If you don't buy into the first three commandments, you may as well forget the last seven. So let's think a little bit now about the original context that the commandments were given in and see if it gives us some kind of insight about what they're about and what we might do with them today. So as Liz has showed us at the start of the service, that God's people have been wandering around in the desert and they come to Sinai and they camp at the foot of the mountain. And it says this, this is in Exodus 19. This is a bit before the reading that we had just now. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, "This is what you're to say to the descendants of Jacob, and what you're to tell the people of Israel. You yourself have seen what I did in Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of the nations, you will be my treasured possession." It's a lovely thing that God says to his people, isn't it? "I've carried you on eagle's wings. You will be my treasured possession." And so Moses does this funny thing. You know, when you're at a party and, you know, there's two people who quite fancy each other and somebody has to go back and forward between them. So, you know, my friend over there, she quite likes you. And then they go back forward and go, "My friend likes you. Oh, would you tell him I like him too?" And, you know, and you have to kind of go back between these two people and carry messages between them. Well, Moses is doing that a bit with God and his people. The people can't come close to God because God is holy and is in mist and fire. And is, you know, and, but the people are over here and God is over here. And so Moses is kind of going back and forth and going, "You know, God really loves you." And the people say, "Yeah, we really love God too. Can you go and tell him that we really love him?" So Moses goes back and says, "The people really love you too." And God says, "Well, if you do, could you obey my commandments, please?" And Moses goes back to the people and says, "Would you obey his commandments?" And the people say, "Yes, could you tell us what they are, please?" So Moses goes back to God and says, "They'd like to know what they are." And they have this kind of to and fro thing between Moses and God and the people. And God says, "Okay, if you want to know how you to love me, if you want to know how to obey my covenant, this is what it looks like." And he gives them the Ten Commandments. It's about a relationship. It's God's way of saying, "I love you so much that I'd like you to live like this." And it's the people saying, "Yes, we love you too, and so we will live like this." So they are rules, but they come out of this deeply loving relationship between God and his people. The Hebrew word for that bit of the Bible that the Ten Commandments is in is Torah. And often that's translated as law. And I think we can get a slightly negative image by using that word. We think it's a bit dry and a bit dusty and a bit boring, the law of God. But actually another translation for Torah is teaching. We could think of the Ten Commandments as the teachings of God. This is God teaching us how to live well in a relationship with him. Saint Augustine paraphrased the law like this. He said, "Love God and do what you like." Love God and do what you like. Because if you're properly loving God, then whatever you do will be right. And it'll be within his boundaries. And that brings us to the first commandment. What's the first commandment? Somebody like to just shout it out. What is the first commandment? Love the Lord your God. That's part of it. Yep. What else? Yes. Can you remember? Has anybody got a Bible? Can you remember what was read just now? It's in Exodus 20. That's right. Love the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. It goes like this. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. People often focus in on the third bit. You know, they say the Ten Commandments. The first commandment is have no other gods before me. and they forget the two bits before it. I am the Lord your God. I brought you out of slavery. Have no other gods before me. And the first two bits are really important for understanding the third bit. Firstly, there's a relationship there. There's a relationship of creation. I am the Lord your God, God says. And in fact, I don't know if you noticed in the reading that we had just now how many times the phrase Lord your God comes. It's a really important part of the commandments, the fact that God is their Lord, their creator. The Hebrew word that's used there is Elohim. Elohim. I am the Lord your God. And whenever they heard that kind of word, they'd have thought back to creation, how God was their creator and their maker. I am your Elohim. I am your creator. So God's reminding them that he made them. He gave them life in the first place. And if God is our maker, it's always best to follow the maker's instructions, which is why I was very pleased to receive this on the way in. For best results, follow the maker's instructions. We recently bought a new washing machine. Our old one died and flooded the kitchen. And so we went out and bought a washing machine, and we got it home, and we got it in place, and I said to my husband, here you are, here are the instructions. He said, I don't need those, and put them at the side. I can sort it out, I know what to do, he said. So he set up the washing machine, and it started off running very well, and it was fine for a bit, and then after about a week, it started to make really funny noises. And whenever it was on the spin cycle, it juddered such that the whole house almost shook. You know, there was something obviously really wrong with it. So we called out the engineer and said, this washing machine that you have sold us is a dud and it doesn't work. And he came and took it apart, and he had on his face that look of pity that only engineers who come can have on their face. And he said, didn't you read the instructions, to my husband, at which point I was in the corner going, if you'd read the instructions, he said, you would have known that you're meant to open the top of the washing machine and take out the, and then he used a word that I can't even remember, but something to do with transporting it. There's a few men nodding at me now. They're like, yeah, we know exactly what you're talking about. And he hadn't taken out the bits that you need to take out. They're just in there for transportation. And you have to take them out for the washing machine to work properly once you get it in your place. And they were still there. And he looked at us as if we were completely stupid, which of course we were, because we didn't read the maker's instructions. And so here is God saying, look, I am your maker. I know what is best for you. Follow my instructions and it will all go well with you. So the proper response to the God who made us is reverence and respect and obedience. So that's a relationship of creation. And then there's a relationship of salvation. God says to them, I'm the Lord your God. I brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. God has delivered them, and they're so grateful that they want to obey his instructions. I wonder if we see God's rules and laws like that. I don't know about you, but a few weeks ago we were singing great praise to God at Easter and saying, how wonderful it is, God, that you've delivered us from slavery to sin through the death and resurrection of Jesus. You've set us free. And so maybe our response could also be, we love you for that. We want to keep your commandments. We want to do what you ask us to do. So the proper response to the way that God has saved us is love and thanks and loyalty and obedience. I'm the Lord your God, and I brought you out of slavery. And then, and only then, does he go on to say, have no other gods before me. You see, Moses and the Israelites were used to living in a culture where there were many gods. In Egypt, there were storm gods and sun gods and earth gods and crop gods and all sorts of other types of gods. And God has to remind them that he is to be their only God. He is to be their number one. Have no other gods before me. The Hebrew for that word before me is literally in my face. have no other gods in my face. You know, get them out of my presence completely. Get rid of anything else that competes for your devotion to me. This is a jealous God who longs for relationship with his people and will tolerate no competition. So how do we live that out? How do we have no other gods before him? And to help us with this, just for a moment, I'd like to suggest a backwards reading of the Ten Commandments. A backwards reading. Okay, not literally, because then the first commandment would be em erobs dog on ava blas oi. I don't mean literally backwards, but I mean something like this. For whatever God says no to, what is he saying yes to? So, don't commit adultery is do live in a loving, faithful relationship with your spouse. Don't murder is do preserve life and care for it. Don't take God's name in vain is do praise and honour God's name. Don't bear false witness. Do speak positively and truthfully about each other. Don't covet might be count your blessings and rely on God for all that you need. So what might be a backwards reading of the first commandments? Have no other gods before me, might be God will have all of me. God shall have all of me. There's no bit of me that won't belong to God. No little bit of us that might belong to another God. So if we're talking about setting priorities, that's the title of today's sermon, it's not just about putting God first. It's also about putting God second and third and fourth and 99th and 800th and everything. Have no other gods before me. I wonder if God has all of you. I wonder if God has all of me. And of course, we love our spouses and our friends and our families and we work hard and we have hobbies, but we do all of that in the context of God, who is everything. God has all of us, and we live the rest of our life in him. Thomas A. Kempis once said, "Love all things for Jesus' sake, but love Jesus for himself." So does God have all of me? What are some of the things that might creep in and demand bits of me and take me away from that kind of wholehearted devotion to God, compete for that top spot in my life? What are some of the gods with a little g? You know, have no other gods with a little g before me. What are some of your gods with a little g? There might be several things. There might be wealth, sport, politics, food, drink, material stuff, work, other people, technology. These are all good things, and they're all given by God to bless us. But where they start to take that top spot, that little g space, then maybe we need to think again. Technology is a really interesting one. We can be emailing and watching telly and Facebooking and texting all at once now. You can text while you're doing anything else, walking the dog, cooking the tea. You might even be texting during the sermon. Is technology your little g god? Do you find yourself getting a little bit twitchy if you're away from your iPad for too long? You know, do you find yourself getting slightly nervous if you go to a place and there's no Wi-Fi signal? Do you feel a bit lost if you don't have your phone with you? You know, I just wonder, the Lord's been really challenging me. I've got everything. I've got an iPhone, iPad, you know, iMac, everything. And I get a bit twitchy if I haven't checked my email for a little bit. And God's been challenging me this week. You know, is technology, the ability to be in touch with people all the time, becoming a little g god for me? I don't know. Might be something different for you. And as I said, all of these things are not wrong, but it's when they become controlling or all-encompassing or take the focus that should be God's, that God might say, get that out of my face. You know, I need all of you. It's interesting there that when God says, you shall have no other gods before me, it's singular. It's you singular. It's not just you as the people shall have no other gods before me, like you shall be a godly people. It's you and you and you and you shall have no other gods before me. It's a personal thing. God is really wanting this relationship with me personally. Does God have all of me? Just like to close by telling you a story. I don't know if it's true, but even if it's not, it's still a good story. There's a lady called Emily Gloria Wilson. Emily Gloria Wilson. She was the family housekeeper for a man called John Galbraith. He was a well-known American economist and author. And at the end of a very tiring day, John Galbraith had asked Emily to hold all telephone calls while he took a nap. Shortly afterwards, the phone rang. It was President Lyndon Johnson, and he was calling from the White House. "Get me Mr. Galbraith," he said. "This is Lyndon Johnson." "He's sleeping, Mr. President. He said not to disturb him," said Emily. "Well, wake him up. I want to talk to him." "No, Mr. President," said Emily. "I work for him, not for you." When Mr. Galbraith eventually called Mr. Johnson back, the president could scarcely control his pleasure. "Tell that woman I want her here in the White House," he said. That's exactly the kind of devotion and loyalty that God is looking for from us. A radical and undivided loyalty. "You shall have no other master, no other God besides me." So I wonder if in the spirit of Emily Gloria Wilson, when the little g gods come calling, perhaps we can tell them, "I work for God and not for you." So the first commandment, "I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me." It's a demanding and challenging one, isn't it? Even if this was the only commandment, even if there weren't nine more that we were going on to, we still might be in trouble. It's just as well that we have Jesus, who came and lived and showed us how to have a relationship with the Father, not because of keeping commandments, but because of him. And we keep the commandments out of love for him. We don't have to keep the Ten Commandments, including this first one, out of duty or fear or having to earn our way into heaven. We keep them because we want to respond in love to our great Creator, Redeemer God, who's shown most clearly to us in Jesus. So perhaps keeping the commandments, and especially this first one, is our way of saying yes to him. "Yes, God, you shall have all of me." Let's pray together.